thank you all for coming. Thank you for coming for our Young Actuaries Program Insight Session. For those who don't know me, I'm Jia. I'm the president for YEP. Today, we have a very special guest. He's actually someone very dear to my heart. I've worked for him, and I learned a lot from him as well. So hopefully today, you'll learn something from him. So Darren has more than 20 years of working experience in the life insurance industry. He's currently the chief actuary at MLC. Before that, he was working at Clearview, BT, and also CBA. So he has worked in many roles, valuation, pricing, capital, anything that I'm missing? No, I think that's it. Yeah. So he'll be sharing his work experience and talk about the skill set that is required to do the different roles and also more in general in the modern world as well. So without further ado, please welcome Darren. Thank you.
Thanks, Jia, and thank you all for coming and giving up your time. Appreciate that. So today, I'm going to talk a little bit about myself as well. So my upbringing and what I've learned from that and how I apply it to my work life today. I'm going to talk about one of the important things for both pricing and valuation actuaries is trust and being a trusted advisor to the business. So I'm going to talk about that generally. And then I'm going to talk about what it means to be a great pricing actuary and a great valuation actuary. And then from a SINS, I'm going to show you a video of one of the things that we put together. Feel free to put your hand up and ask questions throughout the presentation, and there'll also be an opportunity at the end to ask questions as well. So I'll start about talking about my upbringing and what it taught me. So my first house was 101 Engle Road in Campbelltown. 101 Engle Road had stairs, and they were quite steep stairs, and most parents put protective gates on the top of those stairs to stop the kids falling down. We didn't have protective gates because protective gates stop kids from learning not to fall down the stairs. So I've got an older brother, Brad, a younger brother, Grant, and a younger sister, Liz. It was Grant who learnt not to fall downstairs. I remember the thuds as he fell down the stairs and the thud as he hit the ground, and there was lots of noise and commotion, but there were no broken bones, and Dad was there saying, "You'll be all right." And so that approach to parenting continued throughout my life, and I learnt to be resilient. So these are my life lessons. First one, resilience. And it's important because that's what you need to overcome the challenges that you have in life. It's what you need when things are hard. And when things are hard, that's when you're usually learning things. So it's an important skill to have. My mum loves that. So she tells about her story about her husband and my uncle, Uncle Neville. They'd just come back from work, and Neville was talking about all the problems that they'd had throughout the day, and Dad was saying, "Yeah, and we fixed them all." So Mum would laugh and conclude the story, and that's why I love your Dad, because he just got on and fixed it. So that's the second thing that I've got from my parents. I'm quite pragmatic. I do what works to get things done. At MLC, our tagline is providing actionable insights through information, and it's the actionable part that's important. So it's great to have information and provide that to the business, but if it's actionable, then it adds value. And so that's what we try to focus on. So pragmatism is a second. For those who have worked with me, part of my management style is just to throw you in the deep end, watch you closely, make sure you're okay, but throw you in the deep end and have high expectations. But it's not always the safest approach. It doesn't always work. My wife, Amanda, tells a story about how my father taught her to ski. So it started off with some gentle snow plows down the bottom of the slopes at Perisher, followed by a gentle ride up a chairlift to the top of a Black Diamond run. Where Dad suggested that she ski down, which she did. She wasn't impressed. Dad was oblivious. But the deep end, that's one of the things that I do. But I try to be a bit more supportive than my dad was. It was Mum, though, who managed the household. So Mum was caring, and she loved each of her four children deeply. She always wanted the best for us. She created an environment where we could all excel. Mum was a bit strict. She expected us to work hard and have a broad range of interests. But she would work hard as well to give us what we needed. She had high standards and expected us to give 100% to whatever we were doing, particularly if it related to education. It was something that she was passionate about. And I think because of Mum, I continue to have high expectations of myself, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that Mum and Dad gave me throughout my life. So that's the fourth and fifth things, so high expectations and caring for others. As a family, we never had a lot of money, but we did have great holidays. One of the holidays, I remember Dad strapping two canoes to the top of the Kingswood. We went away. When we arrived, the three boys got the two canoes down, got a few bits of wood, bolted the two canoes together, some old sheets for the sail, made a rudder, added it on, and voila, we had a canoe. So we pushed it out, sailed away, the rudder fell off, and we paddled back again. So we had some great times together, and that's what I remember. And that's the last one, to have fun. So that's enough about me. Now I'm going to talk about a trusted advisor and what that means for both pricing and valuation actuaries. Particularly, I know there's a lot of, there's a few general insurance students here as well, but this is primarily around, this particular section is around life insurance, where we have quite an important role to play in society. So if someone dies, there's a lot of repercussions for the family. There's the emotional side. But beyond that, once that's passed, you still have to deal with the day-to-day, and you've got the financial costs of living. And that's where the life insurance industry steps in. We literally pay out billions of dollars every year to people when they need it most. So our role in that is to make sure those companies are run as well as they can be run. And within that company, our job is really to be the trusted advisor to management and to the board. So what I'm going to do here is just provide a roadmap that I use to in each of the companies that I've worked in to develop the team and to get the team in a position where we can be a trusted advisor to the business. So how do we do that? As I go through this, just think about a particular individual that you know, that you do trust, and think about what is it about that particular individual that helps you trust them. What is it in the way that they've interacted with you or the values that they hold? For me, there are three elements. The first is that you need to be credible. You need to know what you're talking about. That's the first element, but it's only one element. The second thing is you need to have a relationship. You need to show that you genuinely care about that person and how they progress in life and what happens to them. And the third is you've got to be reliable. So if someone asks you to do something, they've got to have an expectation that you will do what you've asked them to do in a timely manner. So they're the three things. And now what I'm going to talk about is how do you build up each of those three elements. The first is credibility. So as actuaries, we love data. The more data, the better. And the more informative the data, the better. But it's got to be right. And so the processes that we use to create data have got to be robust and usually automated. They've got to be clearly documented and checked. We usually work in a time-constrained environment, so the processes that produce the data need to be resilient to the various things that occur throughout the process. And what I've found is that the processes to check that data need to use technology. So technology can't actually check the data, but they can make it a lot easier to check, and they can make it a lot faster to check as well. The next aspect is tools, and tools around data today are actually fairly inexpensive, but they do need to be carefully designed and thought about in terms of how they will be used going forwards. So that's it. That's the second element, tools. And the third is skills and knowledge. So you need to understand how to interpret the results from those tools. When you get unexpected results from the tools, you need to know how to pull the results apart and interrogate them. And this particular thing, the skills and the knowledge, is something that is quite important for me. So when I'm selecting my next career move, one of the things I look at quite closely is who I'll be reporting to. So there's the peers around you, and you'll interact with those. But the person that you report to, that's the person that you're going to learn from, and that's the person that you're going to get the skills and knowledge from, and those skills and knowledge that is going to drive where you end up next. And so my last role, I actually moved there because of Jennifer, who's here tonight. who I've worked with a number of times. So that's credibility. The next is relationships, and there's two aspects to this. And I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about social relationships, but this is business relationships, which can be quite different. In a business relationship, you're often working with someone who's incentivized to get a particular outcome. And as actuaries, we're usually quite well positioned to help them get there because we understand the way the business works at a level of detail in a way that others don't. And in each of the organizations I've worked, there's always been a real thirst for the information that we get from the data that we work through on a daily basis. So I'm going to talk about this from two angles. One is informing and one's advising. And by informing, I just mean that. I mean, statements of fact, this is what did happen. And if you do that well enough, you get a seat at the table and then you become an advisor. And that really means thinking about where the business is and how do we create value from here. So that's credibility relationships. Any questions on that before I move on to reliability? So reliability is pretty simple. That's as simple as things as, you know, responding to emails when you get asked a question, even if it means telling whoever's writing you the email, I'll get back to you at a certain date. That's at one end. The other end is managing complex projects through to delivery. So they're the three things, and they're the parts that lead to becoming a trusted advisor. Oh, and that's our little tagline, actionable insights through information. So given all of that, what does it mean to be a great valuation actuary? How do you set yourself apart from others? And there is a lot of difference. I sort of, you know, have a rough rule of thumb that a great valuation actuary is probably worth and gets done 3 to 5 times more than an average valuation actuary. That's my rule of thumb. And so I'm quite happy to pay 20-30% extra for that. So the best valuation actuaries really take information and communicate it thoughtfully back to management and in a way that helps the business improve the value of that business. As valuation actuaries, one of the things that I hear is that they don't have enough time quite often. And my response to that is the really good valuation actuaries find time, and the way they find time is by changing the processes. And and they seem to have a knack for being able to resolve issues quickly. So that's one of the things. So the first I've talked about, meaningful communication. So that's taking what you see and presenting it in a way that the user understands, and looking at it from their perspective and from their motivations. Second is improving processes, and that's primarily to free up time so you can do the value-added activities. This is related to that. So if someone understands the model well, they can usually provide quite a rapid explanation of results, and that contrasts to the alternate where you basically spend a lot of time understanding the model before you can explain the results without a sort of intuition for where to look. This is very important. So as a valuation actuary, usually each month or on a regular basis, you do an analysis of profit and you explain why the company made the profit that it did. And that becomes a lot more meaningful when you can connect to real business outcomes. Because then that leads on to, well, what are the options to improve the result? And details do matter sometimes, but they don't always matter. So a great valuation actuary usually knows the difference, and they know when to look at something and when to stop looking. That's a valuation actuary. That's right. It's very, very important to be able to prioritise your time. So that's valuation. Chris is here tonight as well. Help me with he's a pricing actuary at MLC. Help me with the next section. So Pricing actuaries need to understand the end-to-end business. So that means understanding and talking to the claims team, talking to the underwriting team, talking to the product team, and talking to the distribution team. All of those elements matter. And one of the things that happens as a pricing actuary is you'll regularly be asked to provide advice on things that you don't have any information on or not enough information on. So having a good gut helps a lot as a pricing actuary. Great pricing actuary. These are the top five from me. Understands the product economics. And there's a lot of elements in this, and there's a lot of subtlety. One of them is just the trade-off between volume and price. Having that understanding and the implications for unit costs, for example. In life insurance, understanding the selection effects and the impacts that has over time on the portfolio are important. All those, and there's a range of these things, but understanding those and how they interact is critical to do the job. Related to that, understanding who your customers are and the markets and the channels and how we connect to those customers. Outcome focused, so it's... And there's a range of different elements to this, but the big one is making sure that when you make a product initiative, you have a critical eye on how that plays out. How does that change the business that you're getting? How does it change the mix? How does it change the profitability? And what do we learn from the outcomes? This is critical. So building relationships across the business, having a deep working relationship with claims, so that you understand that any trends that are emerging in claims and how does that play back into underwriting and how do these things all connect together? Which is the last point as well. So leading innovation in product underwriting and claims. So up until now, pricing, the first points, it's really a zero-sum game. But to the extent that you can change the product, but I think to a greater extent underwriting and claims, that's where you can create value and create a competitive advantage for your company. That's it for the talk. In our one of our releases of information that we've done to the business, we've done a few. A presentation was put together, so I'm going to show you that. This was used to help create some excitement around some of the information that we had. So here we go. I think the primary purpose was to embarrass me.
Did I do something? Sorry.
Improved colour production, so the dashboard comes alive as if it was printed on a piece of paper. And we're not stopping there. We're also introducing two other major products on this class: IKW Mini, with the same features as IKW Dashboard, but in an even more compact body, so you can take it with you in even more places. And IKW Dashboard Plus, with its super large and super realistic display, so you can become even more immersed in the data. In many ways, these products, IKW Dashboard, KW Dashboard Mini, and IKW Dashboard Plus, are just the start of what we can achieve together.
So that was the last thing. Have fun.
I'll take over here for a while quickly. Does anyone have questions for Darren? I didn't know Darren could be an actor, comedian up there. But that was a fun video. But yeah, questions?
I don't have a question. Mm. Say all our high-performing staff get some IKW Mini.
Right. Incentive to work at MLC, yes. Yeah. I have a question, Darren.
Yes.
So in your slides, you show the great skills to have for a pricing actuary and a valuation actuary. Do you think that someone can be actually good in both pricing and valuation? Because often in an organization, it's structured two different teams. Only the smaller organization, that's where you see an overlap of pricing and valuation actually doing it at the same time. So, well, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I definitely think you can. I think the skills are actually quite similar. So they all relate to... There are some differences. Like, within a valuation team, you need to be, I guess, a little bit more focused on processes and on pricing, a little bit more relationship focused. But apart from that, understanding the fundamentals, the economics of the business, it's all very interconnected. We've just done a piece of work where we've explained the economics of the business, which is coming from the valuation team, but very connected to the work that the pricing team have done. So connecting those two things together, I mean, it's probably an 80% overlap, and you know, some things on the fringe in terms of the, you know, the great pricing and valuation actuaries.
So I've worked in valuation. I found that sometimes you find that the results aren't really the way results occur in the business and MOS in actuarial speak aren't really what the business are looking for. What do you do then?
Well, we just sold our life company to Nippon. to Nippon Life, and I mean that, and that is like they're a large life insurance business, and so what they do is they focus on value, and that is the first thing that they've said to us. You know, we know that you do MOS valuations, but actually, what we want to understand is what the embedded value is and what the value of new business is, and they're Japanese companies, so they say, and we want to know that in what it's going to be in 40 years' time as well. They've got very long term time horizons. So, I mean, it obviously does depend, but, you know, you do have MOS reporting, and the skill is connecting that to the real value of the business and how that plays out, which is just, I mean, you can complement it. You can provide both pieces of information and connect them together.
But sometimes, you know, results could be that lapses are giving you profits, and then it's the communication of...
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
We've made profits, but have we added value?
That's right. But and that comes back to the value reporting. So it depends who your owner is. But typically what happens is all of the large banks and their insurers report MOS profit, and that is the focus because it's the bank and they are focused on current year profits. But historically, most insurance companies have managed themselves with embedded value, and they've done that because it sends fewer of those strange messages. So it's an education piece. And, I mean, we do spend a lot of time on that, explaining this is not so much on the profit, because we can explain that readily, but also moving the business to understand what is the value of the business and how is that changing, which is, it is a real issue for MLC at the moment. Because not only do you get those strange signals, but those strange signals end up turning into management actions. And so the risk is with that, you end up with too short-term a focus. And what that means is two things happen. One, your sales drop because there's less focus on sales and the value that's been created there. And the other thing is expenses. Expenses get cut, and that, you know, can have a long-term cost to the business.
Thanks, Darren. It's the trusted advisor. It's something that Jennifer's mentioned before and you've mentioned. So to actually move from being a young actuary, as we are, or an analyst, to become a trusted advisor, what are some practical things we can do to sort of aid that journey?
Yeah. Well, let me go back to that slide. So the practical things on this slide really relate to the more to each of them. So in terms of the credibility thing, the data piece is the long-term investment that you want to make. You want to spend time setting up the dimensional models that you need to, so that the data is available in a structured way and starts becoming how the business manages the business, how the management manages the business. The tools are important. They need to be simple, they need to be transparent, and they need to be well understood by those who are using them. They're both fairly large investments. The skills and the knowledge piece is that piece that I was talking about. The practical step is really thinking about your career, and that's there are certain skills that you want to develop. Treng will tell you it's project management is the primary one, but there are all the others as well. Relationship building is very important. The skills around understanding the economics of the business are important. So you want to get all these skills, and you want to get and on that last one, it's one thing to understand the economics of the business, and it's quite a different skill to be able to explain that to senior management and the board. So you want to develop all those skills, and really, you want to map it out and be strategic about the jobs that you take, so that the person that you're reporting to, you're going to learn something specific from them, and you want to and obviously focus on your strengths. Informing and advising is a harder one, and it's a longer term one, but that does tend to happen once you've built the first piece and you're providing information on a regular basis. You'll get that seat at the table, and you will start those conversations. The reliability one, it's quite a broad thing, from just basic things like answering your emails, and so it just builds up a rapport with your customers throughout the business. The informing and the advisor relationships, you really want to make that as broad as possible as well. So particularly within life insurance, focus on the underwriting team, the claims management team, the product team, and the distribution team, depending on what the issues are within the company that you're working in.
So think broader than just the spreadsheets, just your immediate team, I guess.
So I've got a rule around this that a lot of teams that I've worked in spend more than 90% of their time on the spreadsheets, on the tools, and that's what they do, and that's how they see the job, doing that. But unless you're communicating, then what's the point? Unless it's going to change the way the business is run. So my rule of thumb, and this is a stretch, is you spend half of your time doing that. Building the tools and creating the results. You spend a quarter of your time thinking about how to communicate, and that is a real skill. You've got to think about, well, what is the point that you're trying to communicate? How will the customer that you're talking to interpret this? What does it mean for them? What are their incentives? What are they trying to do? How are they motivated? So you've got to understand all that, and to turn it into a carefully crafted message is quite a skill, and it does take time. Some of the best people I've worked with, I've always been surprised at how long they spend carefully crafting a message. It's critical, and it's very hard to do well, very easy to do poorly. So maybe spend a quarter of your time doing that, thinking about how you're going to communicate a message, and the other quarter actually communicating and talking. And that's, simple things like having cups of coffee and lunch with people.
Hi, Darren. So you mentioned about the message. So the message takes a long time to craft a good message. So in your opinion, what stands out? What's the definition of, what's your view of a good message versus a not so good one?
It depends on what the issue is. As an example, one of the issues that exists within MLC at the moment is our sales are low. And so that has all sorts of implications, and it's quite complex. So if your sales fall, the unit costs go up, it typically means advisors aren't selling your product, and so not only are you sales low, but they'll start taking their back book away as well. So it's got retention issues. And for a life insurance portfolio, lapses over time mean that the health of the portfolio deteriorates. So you end up with three problems. You end up with an expense problem. This is in the in-force book. You have an expense problem, you have a retention problem, and you have a claims problem. You have all of those three things. And so one of the issues that I had was how do I communicate that to the business in a way that they'll react? And the way we did it was now we just report the sales to lapse ratio each month, and we do that every month. So it's a simple number, and it doesn't really have a message around it apart from, you know, when people are talking to me about it and I go into the details. So the secret there was to make it simple, and that single number, which implied a decline in the business, which most good business people intuitively understand isn't a good thing. So that one was taking quite a complex issue and turning it into something simple. But it can't be too simple either. So usually what we're dealing with here is quite complex issues, and they need to be explained as complex issues. And the skill is figuring out how to take that complexity and communicate it succinctly.
Thank you.
Maybe before Cameron, you ask, I just want to do a quick... Sorry, I know when we have questions, I pause them. just a quick survey. How many of you actually are in the valuation area now? Right? Oh, yeah. Pricing? Okay, there are a lot of hands not shown up yet. Students? No? Consultants? Okay, makes sense. Anything that I miss?
No?
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing now. Data analytics, anyone? Oh, one, okay, yep, cool. No, all right, yeah, just curious to see what's the mix on the crowd here. Cameron, what's your question?
I suppose my question was, as an appointed actuary, your role's somewhat distinct from just being, say, one senior manager with like a lot of responsibility in the business, in the sense you are more of a custodian, you do have a statutory role. Mm. And I'm just wondering, in terms of managing those responsibilities, how have you found it at MLC? Has it actually just been more of the same, in the sense you're already doing a lot of the same sort of stuff, or have you found it's really changed your outlook on certain key aspects of the business?
No, it is very different, and it is hard. I'm lucky. I've got a very good team that supports me. That helps a lot. The other aspect is there are expectations of how you should behave as well. Like this sales one is a classic example where, as an appointed actuary, I'm seen within the business as someone who should be conservative and careful with the way the business has run. And what has actually happened over the last, you know, probably 5 years, is that culture has been quite strong. So not just within the actuarial team, but within the whole business. And that has, to some extent, led to that decline. And so one of the things that I need to do for this particular company is deal to those expense, retention and claim issues. And the way to do that is to start growing the business again. I mean, it's not completely obvious. The other option is you start running it like a business in decline. And so that means you start cutting expenses and doing it differently. That is a viable option, and that has been done, but that's not what we are going to do. And so then I'm in quite a... from an optics point of view, I need to be saying that we need to address this sales issue. At the same time, it's important I can't look to be reckless either, or too commercial is the polite way of saying it. But it is an important responsibility. I mean, and that's another aspect as part of this sale. I've been asked to consider that. So what does this mean for the various policyholders? And there's a range of complex issues that emerge, and
you need to first of all understand them, and then secondly, you need to be able to communicate them very clearly and succinctly, and provide, you know, options for how best to deal with them.
Hi, Darren. Do you have any advice for someone who's working in the consulting, because we are neither doing valuation or pricing specifically?
I think it's very similar. Like, these, what you're doing is you're providing a service to companies who are dealing with these type of issues, and they want to do the same thing. You should really be trying to set yourself up as a trusted advisor as well. It is more difficult. Like, within the business, you can set up this infrastructure and you can, on a regular basis, talk to the business about what's happening because you're looking at it on a month-by-month basis. So that is harder. You don't have that. But really, you're sort of putting yourself in the relationships part, and you're depending on people within the business to help you with the tools and the data and the information. And your job is to take that and make meaningful recommendations to increase value. The other thing is, it's important not to see yourself as in a sales role. Like, that, it's quite easy to fall into that, because you get told, you've got to generate your billable hours and you've got to deliver something. That comes across very quickly. If you change that around to being, this is a service that we're providing, and it's very easy to add value in these organisations. I mean, the profits are huge and the opportunities are great for people that understand the economics of the business and how it works. And just making small changes can create a lot of value. So you should try to see yourself as, providing that service rather than trying to sell something.
Nobody experience from Deloitte. What additional skills do you think we need to develop if we want to move from a valuation or pricing actuary into an appointed actuary?
So it's a similar one. I think it is changing from the step that I've had to do. So Jennifer left in April. So over the last 6 months, I've moved from, being the head of insurance, which was very, there's a lot to be done. So I was very involved with the way things were done, and I've had to step away from that and rely on people more. I've had to make a lot more judgments about what we do and what we don't do. Particularly what we don't do has been making those judgment calls is important, so that you do focus on the right things. Particularly in a company as complex as MLC, where there's a lot going on, there's a lot of people involved, and they're all incentivized to make change, and so a lot of change does happen. And so it's picking, what does really matter for the long-term value of the business from the customer's point of view and from shareholders' point of view. And making sure you take time to step back and think about issues carefully is important. You can get caught up in the day-to-day and, the fast operations of the business. I find I actually think quite differently in different circumstances. So in the day-to-day operations of the business, you come in and there's 10 things that need to be done, and you start working through those. Whereas if you're in a different environment, working from home can actually create those opportunities to sit back and reflect on, where should we be going as a business, where should we be going as a team. It's important to do both of those.
Hi. I work in GI, but I suppose this question is relevant for any organisation. Some organisations are organised in such a way that particular teams do more of the back office data analysis, and then there might be another team that's also actuarial that's kind of linking, trying to get the business insights out of the models or whatever analysis the first team has done, and then there's the actual business, might be a portfolio manager or something like that. If you are part of the first team that does the actual analysis and doesn't actually have a direct line to a customer that ends up using the analysis, how can you become a trusted advisor in that way?
I actually think you get a huge advantage from being in that space. If you're working in that thing where you're working with the data day in, day out, and you're working with the tools, there's a lot of things that you see, and the risk is that it becomes so obvious to you that you don't think others want to know about it. But I've never actually had that. Whenever I've talked about the insights and the information that I'm seeing, there is a genuine thirst for that. And so, you know, you're in a team which, you know, according to your management structure, you're not supposed to be talking to the business, or you're supposed to be communicating through some others. But at the end of the day, you're the one who knows. You're the one who's got that information, and it's first figuring out, well, what is the message? What is useful? So there is a lot of information, and this has happened and that has happened, but so what? What does that mean, and how do we create value from that? But I think once you get that, once you understand a couple of things about how you could be improving the business, you talk to those people who are supposed to be talking to the business, and then, you know, it's going to happen where, you know, if you own the issue and you're passionate about it, people will see that, and you'll get involved in the conversation.
Final questions before I wrap up? No? Okay. Thank you, Darren, for doing this presentation, spending your time here. I thought it was a very good journey. I actually didn't know about your personal background, you know, the life lessons. Now I know why you throw me in a deep end. no, I'm kidding. But it's really good to hear and reinforce this trusted advisor model again, to be credible, to be reliable, and also to build relationships. On top of that, what are the skill sets required to be a good valuation actuary and also to be a very good pricing actuary? So thank you, Darren. On behalf of the Institute, we have a very small token, a gift for you. And thank you. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yeah.